Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hasbro has a Dungeons & Dragons Adventures channel in your sights. What's it like now, and what will it look like next year and beyond? The answer from Entertainment One Senior Vice President Tom Dannon when he joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. One of Amazon Freebie's most popular scripted attractions launched its third and final season this past Wednesday. Our next half hour features the master storytellers of Pretty Hard Cases, Cassie Cameron and Sherry White. And we'll dive into the present and future implications of artificial intelligence-powered television in our second hour with Veritone Senior Vice President Sean King. Also ahead, is an Apple TV Plus Paramount TV Plus combo coming your way next year? NASCAR's new TV Highway, our classic trivia question, and video games get smart over smart TV, our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present more than 40 podcast sites, including the iRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Audible, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our first hour is brought today by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. Happy December 1st to you, you, and especially you out there. Wherever you are, we welcome you on this Friday afternoon to the latest edition, our first of this month, of the program all about TV's current and future. 48 degrees and cloudy here in the Big Apple at the top of the hour. We have a wonderful 2 hours in store for you. Great guests all the way through. Tell your friends to tune in and have them get involved in our phone and chat room interaction. So anyway, get yourselves ready. Strap in. We got a great show ahead of you. And we invite you from the start to be interactive with our guests and yours truly. All you got to do is pick up the phone and dial in. And when you do, you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we have our chatroom business for you right now. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can interact with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on that Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Stream. Follow those instructions. Help you live with you. In order that you have enough time to be with our guests and to have the most time possible to be with our guests, we're going to do things a little bit differently on this first December 2023 episode of this program. We're only going to have one commercial break in each hour, usually around the bottom of the hour, and we'll also have one promo break each half hour, either a quarter after or around quarter two, so we have the most time possible with you and with our guests. And we'll get all of it underway. First, we have news notes. The Wall Street Journal is circulating a report this afternoon on the possibility of Apple and Paramount Global offering the public their respective mega content services as a combo subscription. Discussions between Apple and Paramount on this arrangement are happening, according to sources speaking with the Journal. If this comes to fruition, Apple TV Plus and Paramount Plus, paired up, would be available to customers and consumers at a lower monthly price than either service separately. Apple and Paramount are not confirming or rejecting the report at this hour. NASCAR will double the number of TV enterprises running its top auto races under its its wing from 2 to 4. That's 2 to 4 TV enterprises starting in 2025. Fox or FS1 stay on as carrier of the early season stops, Daytona 500 included, while NBC, Peacock, and USA under parent NBC Universal split second half and playoff races. The new players, Prime Video and TNT, will offer 5 races each midway through each season. The new contract runs to the end of 2031. Sources maintain NASCAR will get $7.7 to $8 billion for this TV rights agreement, 40% more than the current deal, which ends next fall. Incidentally, the NASCAR Xfinity Series will start on the CW, as earlier advertised, in 2025. Now, quickies, Golden Bachelor fans, rejoice. ABC will invite you to the wedding of GB Jerry Turner to fiancée Teresa Nist January 4th. ABC will present the ceremony live from Costa Rica. New made-for-TV holiday film, The Christmas Break, premieres on Fox December 21st. Justin Long and India Mullen co-star as a couple confronted with extended family ties and issues in Ireland. The Astra TV Awards, formerly the HCA or Hollywood Community Association Awards or Hollywood Creative Alliance Awards, will be handed out January 8th in Los Angeles. And for the first time, the annual Media Access Awards that showcase achievements in disability representation on television and other media will be televised. Public TV station KCT in Los Angeles will carry the ceremony this Sunday night while arrangements for national distribution are in play. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in a radio exclusive, Entertainment One's Senior Vice President, Tom Dannon. Tom, happy to have you here.
Hey, Simon. Great to be here. Really enjoy the show, and I enjoy talking about D&D and the weird and wonderful world of the Fast Channel environment. So happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and let's do it. This new D&D Adventures channel has been around for about a month. How is it doing?
It's doing very well. You know, it's a very interesting thing operating in the Fast Channel space because we are kind of operating without any real promotional support from, you know, like you would have from a traditional network. So we're kind of doing it all on our own and relying on word of mouth and the very enthusiastic fan base that D&D has. So it sort of feels like uncharted territory, and it feels very hard to really know what the benchmarks for success are. But so far, it seems like we're getting terrific viewer engagement, and people seem to be really excited about the channel and really enjoying our originals and our licensed content. So far, so good.
How are you getting the word out to people? I know that I did not know that this channel was on the air, much less in development by Hasbro, until we got a press release a couple weeks ago. So how are people finding out about this channel and where they can find it?
Yeah, that is exactly the struggle that we're having for a number of reasons. I shouldn't say struggle, but the challenge. The great thing that we have is, like I said, the fan base is very aggressively into D&D. And one of the things that our original shows have going for it is that we had about, I want to say, 100, 120 special guests across our original series. They were very, all the formats are very sort of a talk show format where there are different guests on each episode. So we had a ton of D&D influencers, content creators, celebrities like Patton Oswalt and Seth Green and Matthew Lillard who were on the shows who are tweeting and posting and promoting the shows all on their own, which, by the way, is the best gift that any of them could give us beyond showing up and doing our show for the $3 we had to pay them for their appearances. But our talent is so excited about D&D and so excited to bring it to a broader audience that we've really had this like groundswell of support from our talent who really are not beholden to us in any way. You know, they showed up and shot a show with us for 3 hours one day, 4 hours the next day, and then, you know, in a traditional show, that would be the end of their involvement. But in this case, we're, you know, sending them assets to post on social media and really kind of empowering them and giving them the agency to go and be ambassadors for our show because and our channel because, you know, really, like I said, we don't have the traditional network support where there's an ad budget and a promo budget. So we really have been depending on our talent to be more than just talent and be partners in this with us. So far they have been, and it's been really great. And of course the real challenge is that, you know, right now we're on Amazon Freevee and we're on Plex, and both of those services don't operate like networks, as you know. They operate more like YouTube, where they don't advertise the shows, they advertise themselves. So it's not like they're running promos and getting the word out. It's really been up to us, which has been a challenge, but sort of thrilling because, like I said, we've had this groundswell of support from the fans and the talent. So that's how we're doing.
I should point out that both Amazon Freevee and Plex as multi-channel bundles have anywhere from 350 to over 400 channels to deal with. So it does spread things quite a bit.
It really does, and it you know, makes it hard to direct people to the channel because, you know, we can tell them you can watch it on Plex or Freevee, but, you know, Freevee doesn't let us right now. They don't provide deep links, so you can't say, hey, click on this link, it'll take you right to the show. You have to navigate there. You have to click on live TV. You have to find the channel. Once you've found the channel and it's something that Amazon knows you're watching, it will very quickly start to pop it to the top of your feed. So once it knows you've watched it, you know, Amazon is very good at collecting data and using data, as we all know. And so basically it will feed you the channel once it knows you want it. Finding it is a bit of a challenge. Plex is somewhat easier, now we've got video on demand live for all of our shows, so people can much more easily get to and watch the individual programs, which is great. But as we add more carriers, the complexity will of course continue. You know, we're very much at the beginning of the world learning how to watch fast channels and the carriers learning how to promote and make them accessible. And as we add carriers, it will only become more complicated that, you know, we can't basically provide a link to say like, hey, click this to watch. It's more like if you want to watch it on Plex, do this and this and this and this. So that is an interesting challenge that is really just part of where we're at in the fast channel world right now. These are very, very early days, and I'm sure all these things are going to be worked out. We just have the interesting challenge of working them out kind of in real time.
Mm-hmm. In a moment, I want to get into the original programming, because if people think out there, this is an all rerun channel, it's not. There is original programming out there, and we want to get to it because these shows are quite interesting. And in two cases, these series are developing what you might call hybrid scripted television on the improvisational track. But first, how long has this channel been in development for? What got the road going to make this channel happen?
Let's see. Yeah, it's been almost 2 years that we've been working on this. Hasbro bought Entertainment One, the company I work for, in 2017, I think, and you know, came in with a real initiative to make Dungeons & Dragons programming and create a more accessible world for D&D than has, you know, traditionally been a part of the D&D world for the past 50 years of its existence. You know, it's always been kind of a specialized, you might call it a nerdy, small world that has some barriers to entry, you know? So part of Hasbro and E1 making the D&D feature and making these channels has been this initiative to open up the world, make it more accessible, provide on-ramps to people who are into the world and want to learn more about the mythology and the, you know, kind of world that's been built. And also an on-road for casual gamers who want to get past that first frightening hump of learning all the rules and learning how the game works, which once you kind of take those barriers down, the game is very accessible and can be customizable to any style of gameplay, any style of storytelling. But that initial barrier is sort of hard to get by. So all that is to say that the Fast Channel became a conversation as a way to bring the world of D&D, both the creative world and the gameplay world, to a wider audience. It's taken about 2 years, and a lot of times along the way it seemed like it wasn't going to happen. We're all pretty thrilled that it did, and hope to be adding to our original programming hopefully next year.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a little bit. And I should point out that when you turn the channel on, you are going to get things like the former Dungeons & Dragons animated shows in the 1980s, some other animated shows as well. And what really makes this interesting, I mentioned before, is you have these three original shows, and two of the three involve scripted improvisation. The first one is called Faster Purple Worm Kill Kill, and it has people like Seth Green, Patton Oswalt, you mentioned before, Sean Gunn, Street Ulrich, and what they do, along with the co-creator of this, Matthew Lilliard, is that they play the game, but they also improvise storylines. Explain how it works.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the conceit of this show is that it's four first level characters. So if you don't know D&D, that's like a total newbie who has no skills, no hit points. They are very, very killable, weak characters. And in the adventure that they get sucked into on the show, they are immediately confronted with a epic boss level beast, a dragon, a purple worm, one of the characters from D&D lore that will just stomp on all of these characters immediately. So they die at the end of each episode. Each episode is four new characters, and by the end of the hour, they're all dead in grand comic fashion. So it's about, you know, creating the story of the episode, getting to know the characters, really investing in them. Some of them have songs, they have backstories, they have hopes and dreams and an ambition to be a great warrior or a great hero, but none of the means to actually accomplish that goal. So we have four people doing improv in their characters, walking into certain death. then the whole hour is basically spent playing in this space where you know that these characters that you've invested in and have been so richly brought to life by our performers are absolutely doomed. Hilarity ensues.
We are speaking with Tom Dannon. He is Entertainment One Senior Vice President of Current Programming, and he is the person that is overseeing the new Dungeons & Dragons Adventure Channel from Current E1 parent Hasbro, which is now available on Amazon Freevee. That's the multi-channel bundle, and Plex, with other multi-channel bundles, smart TV sets, devices to come down the road. Tom joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're just getting started with this two-hour edition on this December 1st, 2023 of the Promo About TV's Current and Future. Summit. I'm with you along for the ride from New York, 48 degrees as we get near the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next episode on Monday, another 90-minute episode for you, and we're going to introduce you to a service available on smart TV sets and devices that is being an incubator to new television concepts. It's called Open Television. You'll meet the co-founder and executive director, Elijah McKinnon, and they are about to launch a pitch contest for new television series. And then you may remember that a week ago we gave you the news note that Sharp, you know, the TV set maker used to announce from Sharp Minds come Sharp Products. Well, they're now in the smart TV set game here in the United States. We will have an exclusive interview in our second half hour with the president of Sharp Electronics U.S., Jim Sandusky, and one of the lieutenant senior vice president, Peter Wheatbell. And finally, Entrepreneur Magazine is now getting into the television channel game with Entrepreneur TV. You'll meet the head of programming there, Brad Gage. Yes, Shark Tank or something like it, 24/7 in some very interesting ways. It's all coming your way Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively here live. I will be televised. The other show that has a scripted element to it is called Encounter Party, Tom. And this is one where you have seven actors, they play Dungeons & Dragons, and they create a fantasy story that is serialized over the run of the episodes. Explain how that works. So by the way, with both shows, how do you visually illustrate the show so it doesn't come off as just like a flat, you know, talk-type presentation?
Yes. Theater of the mind is a phrase that we use a lot in the D&D world. The Purple Worm show is, you know, you kind of think of it as whose line is it anyway? So it's four people on a stage. We have lighting effects. We have an immersive sound environment. We actually have a live piano player doing live score to kind of bring the world to life and sound effects. But really, we're counting on the commitment of our performers as they role play, as they improv, to really like paint the picture through their accents and their voices and their description of what their character is and does. So it really, it's funny. It doesn't sound like it works, but it really does. And you know, again, it's due to just like the tremendous commitment and creativity of the talent on the shows. The kind of difference between Purple Worm and Encounter Party, I guess you would say Purple Worm is something that you can tune into for an hour. They're standalone episodes. There are laughs throughout. So it's very engaging to a new viewer, someone who's new to the D&D world. Whereas Encounter Party is a 22-hour-long story told in one-hour increments. And it's the same seven characters and the same seven actors in each episode. They are in a they're basically at a Dungeons & Dragons table, the table that all of our true D&D players are obsessed with having a great table to play the game at. And we've created the most epic version of that possible with sets in the middle, so you can not just imagine but see the world that the characters are interacting in. And basically, it's theater in the round, and it's almost like a World Series of Poker in a lot of ways, except with fantasy role-playing, as our characters go on this 22-hour-long adventure that, you know, we like to say is as epic as anything on Game of Thrones. Our players are all very accomplished actors and writers, directors, and performers, so they really know how to tell a story. And we kind of create these moments as they're playing the game. For those of you who aren't familiar with Dungeons & Dragons, there's a dungeon master who tells the story, and then the players kind of do improv in their characters, literally role-playing. And our players will get so intensely into the scene work that they're doing that at times it really feels like a scripted show. It doesn't feel like improv at all. We play a lot of it very dry without much music. We occasionally use music, but only sometimes, because what we really want to do is be in the world of not just the actors and the players, but in the world of their characters. So we really have the characters speak to each other and have their moments and get intense and do monologues and, you know, talk about their hopes and dreams and build their backstory in a way that's really fun to watch. And even though, you know, I think Encounter Party is made slightly more for people who are a little bit more into the world of tabletop role-playing games already, it's also surprisingly accessible to people like my wife, who really don't care about D&D, or I should say don't know how it works, and probably would never play the game as an adult. The reports that we've gotten from people who just really aren't necessarily into Dungeons & Dragons is that they are shocked and surprised by how deeply immersed they've gotten in the story that we're telling, which is hugely exciting and really was, you know, as I said earlier, kind of the goal, to build an on-ramp so people can appreciate the huge creative world of D&D and also understand how, if they wanted to play the game, they could.
Mm-hmm. The third show, by the way, which is like a Food Network kind of show, is called Heroes Feast, where you have a chef and a filmmaker by the name of Sujita Day working, you know, cooking up recipes from the Dungeons & Dragons cookbook with the help of different special guests. How do you want to expand the original programming in the year ahead, especially if you get advertising support?
Yes. Oh, we have so many plans, and we are kind of waiting to get enough data about what works and what doesn't work on the channel. You know, we have our 62 hours of original programming, these three shows that we've discussed, and then we have a bunch of licensed content, which includes, you know, the animated series from the 80s, which is a fan favorite, some other so-called actual play shows that have been created by other people that we've licensed. You know, that's where people are literally playing D&D on screen. And then there have also been some slightly more produced shows that we have licensed that we're broadcasting. And we honestly don't know yet what really is going to kind of catch fire and keep the viewers engaged. And it's going to be very telling in the next weeks and months to see, you know, do the originals get enough eyeballs to justify the greater cost than shows that we could license or library shows. It seems like they do, and they will, but, you know, like I said, we don't have quite enough information yet, but it seems good, and hopefully next year, you know, right now, Entertainment One is making a transition from being Hasbro-owned to Lionsgate-owned, but it seems like Hasbro still has a lot of enthusiasm to make more shows, possibly to coincide with product launches. You know, they've got lots of new stuff coming out all the time. You know, we made the Heroes Feast coincide with the release of the second book in the Heroes Feast cookbook series. So I would expect there might be more kind of synergy like that. But yeah, really, we don't know. We have tons of shows that we've gotten to a certain point of development that we're really excited about. And now we're just kind of waiting to see what makes sense and what's worth the spend. And then is it stuff that we produce ourselves? Is it stuff that we farm out to current content creators who you can find online right now and you know, give them a budget and say, you know, give us 20 hours? Or just licensing existing content. It will probably be, honestly, a kind of a smorgasbord of all of the above. But, you know, obviously what we're most excited about is the potential ability to make more originals because it's just so fun to do. And like I said, the so much of Hollywood grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons and learned how to tell stories by playing Dungeons and Dragons and found their first creative outlet as a kid and as a teenager through Dungeons and Dragons, that the people who want to engage with us and make shows with us is just breathtaking and so exciting. So hopefully we'll be doing many more hours of shows with many, many creative people.
Tom, we have about a minute left. Two quick questions in one. How ambitious do you see this channel getting, especially with things like computer animation, maybe scripted television, perhaps interactivity, where you can interact live in terms of with the players, let's say, on particular shows? And secondly, I know the Dungeons & Dragons TV series, live-action scripted series, is still being worked on for Paramount Plus. Where is that?
Oh, man, we are so excited to explore the ability to do live TV, live streaming TV, interactive TV. You know, right now I think it's almost like we're beta testing the channel and making sure we've got all the tech worked out. But I know in the coming year or years, we're definitely going to want to try and work interactivity into this. Yeah, what was the second part of the question?
I know that we've had reports about Dungeons & Dragons live-action scripted series being made for Paramount Plus. Now that we have the writer's strike and the actor's strike, where does that project stand?
Yeah, hopefully that will get you know, back on track now that the union stuff is getting settled. And, you know, I know there's just tons of enthusiasm to keep on building this world and exploring it in all the different venues and all the different mediums. So I'm sure we'll have more news on that very, very soon.
Again, it's the Dungeons & Dragons channel or Dungeons & Dragons Adventures channel from Hasbro Entertainment. It currently is on Amazon Freevee. That's the multi-channel bundle. Plex, another multi-channel bundle. And by the way, we had Plex on a few weeks ago on this program. You can go to our website or our podcast sites to check out that particular episode. And we should also point out that other smart TV sets, other smart TV channels will take the channel as time goes along. And I understand that there is an Instagram site that people can go to find out more about the service. What is that?
It is Watch D&D Adventures. That's D, the letter N-D, not A-N-D. Watch D&D Adventures. And there we'll have a hyperlink that you can click on, which will take you to a web page where you can click through to Plex or Freevee and future carriers in the future. Start watching.
Tom Dannon, thank you so much again for being with us. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for making the channel happen. And I have a hunch hopefully we will reconnect with you soon to see how things are going and how ambitious this network gets.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's been a real pleasure.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a super weekend.
You as well.
Tom Dennett, Senior Vice President of Current Programming at Entertainment One, responsible for the Dungeons & Dragons Adventures channel. More Swabby Televised coming away. First, a word to the fine folks at BlendJet. You know, if your blender is bulky and a pain to operate, give BlendJet the opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks an easy pleasure. You know, BlendJet is so portable to work up a smoothie at the office, your favorite protein booster at the gym, or a poolside margarita. It's quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com, grab yours today, and be sure to use the promo code TELEVISE to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. And that's on top of a new holiday offer that's going on right now at BlendJet.com. So go to BlendJet.com, grab yours today at a special holiday season price, and be sure to use the promo code TELEVISE to get 12% off that order and free two-day shipping. Remember, you can blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. When we come back, we will have the masterminds behind the popular Amazon freebie series, Pretty Hard Cases. We will have Tessie Cameron and Sherry White. They both join us live from Canada after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, freer.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love scary, suspenseful, old-time radio, check out Eerie House. It happens today at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. That's Eerie House. Today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, that's the R 24/7 always on YouTube. Welcome back to more of our two-hour edition of Tomorrow We Televise, kicking off December 2023. Simon, I'm with you live from New Web, New York. Two more guests coming your way this half hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. So pick up the phone and dial in 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. But in case you missed the first half hour of the show, we have only one promotional break in this half hour. And we've already done our commercial break, so that is out of the way for this hour. We'll have another one for you at or near the bottom of the next hour. And we should point out that before the top of the hour, we've got the classic trivia question coming your way. So get your thinking caps on. Six prizes in play can be yours this weekend if you know the answer to the question we're going to pose at the top of the hour. Right now, we're going to bring your way two people who are responsible for a very popular series on Amazon Freebie. That's the channel that has become one of the most popular attractions over the last 2 years. And it just started its third and final season. It's called Pretty Hard Cases. Joining us live from Toronto and Newfoundland, respectively, co-creators, showrunners, executive producers, Tessie Cameron and Sherry White. Tessie and Sherry, welcome in.
Hi. Thank you so much. Hi.
It is a pleasure. And Tassie, welcome back. You've been with us before on some of your previous projects, like Mary Kills People, 6 Days in the Valley. That was on ABC. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here, Simon.
And Tassie, we'll start with you. What's it been like to put the third and final season of this series together with Sherry?
Well, we wrapped it a year ago probably, so it feels like a long way away now, but it was it was great to do a third season together. It's a show about female friendship, and Sherry is one of my closest friends, and so we have a blast doing it together. So finally we were out of COVID and we able to see our crew's faces again, and we had a great third season.
And Sherry, you've worked with Tassie before on 6 Days in the Valley, on Rookie Blue, which had a great run on ABC down here in the United States. What keeps you two going as co-partners, if you will, in shows like this?
Well, I mean, Tassie's very collaborative, very open. I always love working with her, and you know, we've started working together, I think it was 2010, and we have a lot of fun. We laugh a lot, and we just build on each other's ideas, and she's really, really smart, so I like to hitch my wagon to smart people.
Thanks, Cher.
Now ask Tassie that question. No, I'm kidding.
Well, Tassie, in the case of Pretty Hard Cases, you have two women who are partners. In some ways, they're exact opposites, but in one way, in a big way, they're very smart folks. and they find a way to tackle very tough cases despite their differences.
Yeah, which, exactly.
I
would say is similar to me and Sherry in a way. I think we're united in our sense of humor, and I would like to say that, I mean, I say modestly in our intelligence, but that, you know, we're very, very different, and that's part of what's so fun about working together is Sherry will come in with an opinion or a story or an idea for a character I would never have thought of in a million years. And so it's working with somebody who you respect so much, who's got such a different background and experience from you. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think when you're...
Go ahead, Sherry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, when you're working together so much, it's a different level of friendship when you're kind of wrapped up in each other's work, because it's not just, you know, when you're off and every now and then you get out to dinner. It's like almost 24/7 with somebody when you're working with them, and it's great.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, was this series inspired by police people that either you or Tessie got to know, and you felt, okay, there's a germ of a story here to explore the series?
Not really, though. We often speak to and have spoken to amazing consultants on the show throughout the years, and even when we were on Rookie Blue. So there was tidbits of stories from cops that inspired us throughout, but it was more, we just liked the idea of two women at the, you know, height of their career, where their career has been their priority for a long time, sort of at the expense of their own personal life, which is where Tassie and I were, and so that's kind of where the idea came from.
Hmm. Tessie, what's very interesting about the series also is that you have two actresses, both of which have, in a way, comedy backgrounds. One of the co-stars is Meredith McNeil, who was in the Baroness Von Sketch Show, a wonderful series that was on IFC here in the States for several seasons and got great reviews. And the other is Adrian Moore, who plays the other detective, who was from Orange Is the New Black, which, as many people know, is one of the great dramedies of recent years on Netflix. So when you have two actresses that have comic or serial comic backgrounds, how does that impact the characters they played and how they develop over the three seasons?
Well, it's interesting with those two women. They were our kind of platonic ideals for those characters. We kept saying to ourselves, we'd like somebody like Meredith McNeil, we'll never get her. We'd love somebody like Adrian Moore, we'll never get her. And then we got these two women that were absolutely at the top of our list. And I think that we knew that their different kinds of comedic talents needed to be highlighted. And I think we wrote with those specific talents in mind. But then, you know, of course, they come to the table and bring ideas, bring improv, bring their energy. And you have to make sure that the character that you've designed for them gives them an envelope or a skin to work within, and then you'll just watch them do what they do. They were both incredible.
Mm-hmm. And Sherry, how does that impact their byplay? How does that impact how the shows or the episodes are written, how they're directed, how you stage them up and down the line?
Well, their play was really important and integral to the show, like how much they like to play together. We would always want them to not go too far off, you know, with their improv, because they could just go forever, which was amazing to watch. But was it, you know, sometimes you'd miss the point of the scene if you only did that. So we always tried to make sure we did a version that was written. But we knew that the heart of the show was their friendship and kind of finding ways that they were enlightening each other about the job and about life.
Mm-hmm. Tessie, how lighthearted do you and Sherry make the series? I'm thinking in asking this, one of the great shows way back when was Cagney and Lacey, you know, played by Tyne Daly and mm-hmm. Sharon Gless. And Barney Rosenzweig, the executive producer on that series, made a point of, we want a lot of this show particularly in the way we fashion the relationships between these two, to have sort of a light tone, because we follow a sitcom on CBS at the time when it came out. So let's make everything about the show, whether it's the writing, the directing, how Tyne and Sharon played their roles, to have some bits of comedy amid the seriousness. He even wanted Bill Conti, who wrote that wonderful theme music, to have it be a sort of feel like, wait, maybe you're watching a comedy rather than you're watching a drama. Because, again, mm-hmm. he wanted the show, because it followed a comedy on CBS for much of its run, it was on Monday nights when CBS had a comedy block from like 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time, to have that kind of lighthearted kind of feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, Cagney and Lacey was obviously a huge, I wouldn't say it was an inspiration, but that's a show we thought a lot about when we were creating this. We were also thinking about movies, you know, like Bridesmaids and The Heat, and you know, we were female-focused, female-centric, comedic, but with, you know, some serious, you know, procedural chops. And I think for Sherry and I, we were both coming off fairly heavy shows. I'd come off 10 Days in the Valley and Mary Kills People, and both pretty heavy duty subject matters. And I think we were excited to dig into something that was lighter and that kind of reflected how we are with each other, which are kind of ridiculous sometimes. So part of it was just a personal desire to tackle the issues we love writing about, but with a different tone. But, you know, I think that it did evolve because the first season of Pretty Hard Cases was, we were writing it and COVID hit and George Floyd happened. And so we were kind of having to look at what we were doing and how do you make a show about policing at a time of huge unrest in the world on all sorts of levels, and we were and still be funny. Like it was quite a challenge, actually.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, in this third season, how do both of these main characters evolve, and how do the kind of cases that they tackle, the pretty hard cases, how do they evolve?
Well, they have been apart for about 8 months when season three picks up, and in some ways, you know, they've moved on without each other in a way, and not for the better, but it's a lot of getting back together and finding their groove back together with each other, working together, and, you know, trying to the cases kind of reflect that and other people that have come into their lives. Other friendships, situations, and how do you have this partnership? And can you have a third, like a bit of a third wheel scene going on this season?
And Tassie, what's that third wheel?
Well, we have a bunch of third wheels built into season three. Sam, as Sherry said, they've been separated for 8 months. Sam has made a new friend, a new possibly best friend. And of course, Kelly comes back and feels very threatened by Sam's new friend. Kelly is coming back into a very important relationship with Nathan. And, are they going to stay together, make it work? How is she going to balance that with her friendship? And then at first, some part of the season, Kelly inherits a baby, her sister's child. And, you know, even that becomes a kind of bit of conflict within the primary partnership. Sherry, am I missing
any? Okay.
No, that's...
Mm-hmm. Well, for both of you, does the third season also get into what is life like for these two people and the people around them and the cases they work with and the environment around them? How do they adjust to the next normal, the post-pandemic normal?
Well, we never really acknowledged the pandemic in our show because, of course, our first season, we were at the very beginning of the pandemic. We were, you know, early on, I think it was. So we just thought, we don't want to deal with masks. We don't know how long this is going on. we knew people wanted an escape at that moment. We were too in the thick of it to reflect it. And we actually shot 3 seasons in the 2 years. So we didn't really have the sort of distance from the pandemic to reflect on it. So we ignored it entirely.
Mm-hmm. The show is Pretty Hard Cases, now in its 3rd and final season, which started early this week on Amazon Freevee. That's the ad-supported service of Amazon that runs on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles, including Amazon Freevee's own bundle, which now has more than 350 channels to tune in at any given time. We've got the co-creators, showrunners, executive producers of the program with us, Patsy Cameron, Sherry White. Taxi from Toronto, Canada, and Sherry White from Newfoundland, both wonderful areas. And they're both with us live this half hour here on Tomorrow Be Televised on this December 1st, 2023. Coming out with you live from New York, 47 degrees at near quarter to the hour. Happy you are with us. Make a call. Be part of the program. All you got to do is dial in at 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, you will meet an entrepreneur from Alabama. Her name is Shanita Horton. And she is about to become an unscripted TV personality with a new series on a network you might not know about, but it's been out for several years on smart sets and devices called Nubian Television. It's called Shanita's World. You'll meet Shanita, and we hope to have somebody from Nubian or one of the producers of the show with us. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And coming up near the top of the hour, classic trivia question of the week, 6 prize in play. Let's see if on this first December day of 2023 we can have a winner. So get your thinking caps on. And get ready, question coming your way before the top of the hour. Cassie and Sherry, I want to get your thoughts about what I see as one of the major highlights of Canadian original television, which is procedural. It seems that there's a knack and a very interesting edge with procedurals over the decades, whether it was Wojak back in the 60s, which now people can see on YouTube, Flashpoint, we had the creators of that show on years ago, did very well on CBS, Due South, sort of a unique take with the Canadian Mounties, from Paul Haggis later on to win the Oscar for Crash, your show. It just seems that procedurals, police procedurals, and even procedurals seem hot like Transplant, which is now back on NBC here in the States, you seem to have a knack in Canadian television. Why do you think that is?
What a really good question.
Here's what I do think. I think that we don't have a huge amount of sort of fringe networks here. So we don't have like HBOs and things like that. We don't have a lot of options. So we need to try and target our shows for as broad of an audience as possible. We know that we also have to make these shows. We don't always have the same budget that, you know, that you might have on ABC or some of the bigger studios might have. So we have to learn how to tell these really good stories, in these procedural stories, without spending a lot of money, I mean, comparatively. And so I think we've gotten pretty good at that. Like we can tell a good procedural budget. We don't have the car crashes and the plane crashes and the big explosions all the time. But what we do is we fold our characters in to our procedural stories really well, I think. And so I think that's kind of why we were able to do those stories and sell them in different places in the world. So that's good.
And Cassie, it also seems that you're able to showcase unique sides of police work, whether it's a SWAT team or a terrorist team on Flashpoint, or even one that has a science fiction or mystery aspect to it, like Forever Night, which was done in Canada, or Nightside, which had its own, you know, following when it was on CBS Late Night for a number of seasons. It just seems to be this kind of inventiveness within the genre that makes these shows quite unique and quite well done, very experimental in a way, too.
Yeah, I mean, I actually worked on the first season of Flashpoint with Mark and Stephanie and then moved on to Rookie Blue. And I'm now show running Law & Order Toronto, so I'm actually in the middle of another procedural that's highlighting the differences between, our legal and policing systems and the American systems. And I think I mean, I think Sherry's answer was exactly right about why we can, how we've gotten good at them here. But I think we're also reflecting a certain kind of, I mean, it sounds hokey, but Canadian values on some level in these shows, where I remember on Flashpoint, the goal was absolutely not to end it with a shooting, you know, where the goal was to kind of try and have some empathy for the people in the middle of the story. And I mean, I don't know if that's a Canadian thing, but I think it does let our police characters have some interesting journeys that you don't always see. They don't have to be heroes in the same way, you know?
I think you hit the word right, Tassie, which is journey. The journey of Wasek, the journey of Rookie Blue, the people on Rookie Blue, the journey of the cops on Flashpoint, the journey, et cetera, of the journey of these two cops on Pretty Hard Cases. There's a journey attached that evolves and evolves, and we always see different sides of that journey, especially under pressure.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's right.
Since you brought it up, Tassie, how's it like doing the Canadian version of Law & Order? And I'm wondering if you've had a chance to talk to the people down here, Dick Wolf and crew, now that they're back in business with the writer's strike and the actor's strike done, and they're getting ready to launch the Law & Order shows on NBC mid-January.
That's right. It's going really well. We're just finishing our 9th episode of 10. Sherry wrote an episode for us. It was great to be back together for a bit. It's been very fast. We got a green light in June, and we're shooting by August. So it certainly, I think everybody's tired and has worked crazily hard to get this going and on the air. And but it's been fun. It's really fun. And as
Sherry,
you know, I mean, it's a fully Canadian show. So we're you know, it's Canadian writers, Canadian producers, Canadian owned. So I have yet to speak with Mr. Wolf.
Yeah. Sherry, do you and Tassie, do you get comments from local critics there? Are you going to have, when you're doing Law & Order, are you going to have the Ching Ching or Mike Post's famous, I think, whatever you want to call it, or are we going to have the kind of, you know, rip from the headline stuff? Do people are giving those expectations?
I mean, I think definitely there was a lot of rip from the headlines conversation. I was with Tassie in the early days of getting this on the go back in June, July, and so yeah, we were all it was all headlines, and I think there's a lot of, you know, it was fun to kind of pick a bunch of fun, or not necessarily fun, but like riveting headlines from Canadian and Toronto as much as possible, and spin great stories out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we are using the dumbbells. We're using that.
Yeah. What do you both think about this new situation where, because of the CW, because of other networks, Netflix and so forth, that we're seeing more shows coming down from Canada, the comedy shows like Son of a Critch and Run the Burbs and Children Ruin Everything and Letterkenny and Sullivan's Crossing coming down and finally reaching the United States? And are both of you getting any feedback, or other producers making these shows get any feedback about how they're doing here in the United States on the CW or elsewhere?
I haven't heard how those shows are doing. I hope they're doing well. Sarah, do you know?
No, I haven't heard much at all. I know that there's an appetite, again, because I think we can make shows on smaller budgets. We're used to being really creative. You know, we're all writers who really know how to produce our scripts, and so I think that there is an appetite for content from up here, but I don't know how they're doing. I haven't heard anything.
This I can tell you, both of you, there is a lot of great critical feedback about Son of a Critch on the CW, and there are some people who are thinking that next year, I'm talking about next fall, because the Fox, you know, because the Emmy Awards have been pushed back for this year to January, that Michael McDowell may get an Emmy nomination for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy. There is a lot of push for that.
Okay. Well, that would be amazing. That's filmed here in Newfoundland, where I'm living. So, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, and Sullivan's Crossing, which is done by the same producer behind Virgin River, which continues to do great on Netflix. By the way, we had her on the show early this fall when the CW premiered it. You're getting a sense that that show is starting to get a following. And it's already been renewed for a second season.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
I've been filming second season all fall, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's next for both of you? Is it going to be continuing for you, Cassie, Law & Order Toronto, or are there other projects that both of you are going to be working on down the road?
For me, I'm just trying to get through to the end of episode 10 on Law & Order and then get into post and finish the show. So that's and somewhere in there take a really long nap. So that's all I kind of have on my dance card right now. Cher, what's up for you?
I'm juggling a million things, developing things. I've got features that I'm writing. I'm working on a show that's going to be on Fox in the next year or so. Just juggling a bunch of things right now. But eventually, Tass and I will find our way back to each other at some point, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
She can't get
rid
of that
back. The series is Pretty Hard Cases, and it's now its third season. I'm sorry, did one of you what, said something a moment ago?
No, I just said she can't get rid of me that easy.
You got it. Again, Pretty Hard Cases. It's the series now on Amazon Freebie, third and final season, produced. Executive produced, created, showrun by our guests, Tassie Cameron and Sherry White. You can find an Amazon Freebie that on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles, including the Amazon Freebie bundle. For more details online, go to Amazon.com. That's Amazon.com. Pretty Hard Cases, Season 3, now running on Amazon Freebie. Tassie, Sherry, thank you both very much for coming on. Tassie, thank you again. It's always great to great to have you. Both of you have a wonderful holiday season, you and your cast and crews. And hopefully we will hear more of you in times ahead. And good luck on Law & Order Toronto. I hope it does find its way down to the United States in some way. So NBC or somebody at NBC Universal, Peacock, pay attention. The series is round. Both of you take care. All the greatest.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Simon. Bye-bye.
You're very welcome, Cassie and Sherry. Take care again. Enjoy the holiday season and beyond.
Bye, you too.
Cassie Cameron, Sherry White, joining us live from Toronto and Newfoundland, Canada, respectively. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And because of the fact we launched this after Thanksgiving, we're going to give you more time to catch on. But let's see if we can get a winner. This is December 1st, 2023. Let's see if we can make this today or night that somebody can get a win. And if you do, answer this question correctly and you're first emailing it at simonapple04@yahoo.com. We got six prizes in store for you. We got a free Uber card from AMC Networks. We have a free Redbox Movie Night card from Crackle Connect. We've got two wonderful CDs, The Lifetime Women in Rock, with wonderful tunes from the likes of Cyndi Lauper, Annie Lennox and the Eurythmics, Michelle Shock, Pat Benatar, Liza Ford, many more. And a Chicago classic CD with such songs as Saturday in the Park, Feeling Stronger Every Day, 25 to 64. We also have two best-selling books for you from Jeff Melvoin, the award-winning writer, showrunner of Northern Exposure on CBS. His great book on Amazon, doing very well, Running the Show, Television from the Inside. And from our recent guest, David Craig of University of Southern California, USC, Apocalypse Television, How the Day After Helped End the Cold War. That can all be yours if you know the answer to this question. Name two of the three stars of The Name of the Game. That's a very popular 90-minute series that ran from 1968 to 71 on NBC. Name two of the three stars of The Name of the Game. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address. If you're first select answer, you win. If you're one before, previous guest, you're not eligible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question first thing tomorrow, Saturday morning, on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter or X at UBC Simon TWT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. When we come back, we will have our Friday Takeaway of the Week feature about the fact that maybe this is the year that video games get smart over smart TV, and we'll tell you why. Plus, we will also have the latest on those guests that we are still waiting for from Dude Perfect TV. And coming up near the bottom of the hour, we will be joined by Sean King of Veritone, and we'll have a deep discussion about artificial intelligence, how it's impacting TV now, how it will impact TV both on and off camera in the months and years ahead. All that coming your way after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tomorrow, check up on the world of sports with It's Post Time with the Greek. Tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. I'm sure that the Greek will have a lot to say about the college football championship that's going to wait tonight on ABC with the Pac-12 championship, Oregon versus Washington, the latest on the NFL season, latest on NBA, the in-season tournament, and a whole lot more. That's It's Post Time with the Greek tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR always comes your way, 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome back to the second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this opening day of December 2023, and welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Baum with you along for the ride, live from Nueva York, 47 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you with us from wherever you are joining us across the country, around the globe. And we want to hear from you, if you just joined us. Give us a call. Any thoughts about the world of television, about our takeaway of the week, and about our upcoming guest, Sean King, joining us live with Veritone. He'll be joining us live from San Diego, California, near the bottom of the hour. The subject matter, artificial intelligence, how it's impacting TV now, how it will impact TV, and how you watch and use it down the road. If you have questions or feedback on it, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, you'll see part of our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our second hour of today's episode is brought to you by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. And in case you just joined us, we're only going to have one commercial break in the hour. That's going to be near or at the bottom of the hour. And we'll have one promotional break halfway through this half hour and halfway through the other half hour as well. So we want to give you as much time as possible to be with our guests and to be part of our chat room, or get on the horn with a phone call and let us know what you have to say and interact with our guests. We're going to get this half hour started with our takeaway of the week, dealing with video games, getting smart over smart TV. But first, we have two things we want to bring to your attention. First, actually three. First, we were hoping this half hour to finally have the people behind Dude Perfect TV, the new TV service that is available, and that is Chad Coleman, one of the members of Dude Perfect, and also the person in charge of a Perfect Media company that also runs the kids' service, Kidoodle TV. We had hoped to have them this half hour. We learned yesterday, not happening. However, it looks like fourth chime is a charmer. They want to be on the program next week. We hope they will be on next Friday. If not, we may schedule a special episode with them on Wednesday or Thursday. We will keep you posted as next week goes on. However, they are committing that they will be on next week. So all you Dude Perfect fans out there that were waiting to have this half hour be your opportunity to hear directly from those folks about the new Dude Perfect TV network that's running on smart TV sets and smart devices, one of several new networks featuring YouTube stars and personalities and content creators that are now creating their own television channels available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. So hang in there, folks. We are going to get those Dude Perfect people on one way or another, by hook or by crook. So we'll keep you posted. Next week, everybody think good thoughts that we'll have them. That's one. Number two, I sometimes get questions about how many people catch us on podcast. Well, I'm happy to say that now that we have more than 40 podcast sites taking our program, we are now starting to get great feedback and great numbers about how many people are checking the show out. And I want to give you the latest word on two of our sites. One is Zencastr, that's been with us now for about 2.5-3 months, and the other is Spotify, that joined our family of podcast platforms earlier this year. First, I want to tell you about Zencastr, which has been absolutely marvelous. On Wednesday, we crossed 5,000 plays. That's right, 5,000 plays on Zencastr. And as of 12:45 Eastern time this afternoon, that's 9:45 a.m. West Coast, we are now near 5,100. And we are, for this week, that's Monday to Monday, or right now, Monday through right now, we are over 500 plays for this week. We had about 300 last week of Thanksgiving. And now we are back in business with over 500. And 1 week we had over 1,000. So people are listening to the show, and we really appreciate you, all you on Zencast. Now, also this week, we got some word about how we're doing on Spotify. Now, Spotify was one of the first podcast platforms that started with us around late winter, early spring. So we've been on there for about 9 or 10 months. And on Wednesday, we got a wonderful email from Spotify, what they call their Wrapped, where they send all their podcast makers an update about how they are doing. Well, it turns out for us, Tomorrow Be Televised, we are doing really, really super. Check this out. Since we started on Spotify, our listener base has grown by 186%. Wow, 186%. And our follower base has grown by 320%. 320%. 30 people who listen to us regularly on Spotify are saying that this program is in their top 10 podcasts they listen to on Spotify regularly. 30 people. And of those 30, 22 put us, this program, in their top five podcasts. And 4 of the 22 have us as the number one podcast, the number one podcast they listen to on Spotify. That blows your mind in a great way. And here's something else you should know. So far this year, our most popular Spotify episode was on May 22nd when we had the people behind the Max miniseries, How to Create a Sex Scandal. That was streamed 712% more than any average episode of our series on Spotify. And our most shared episode, that's episode that podcast listeners share with each other, was our March 11th episode dealing with the Canal Media TV series, the animated series Super Ellis, which, by the way, has been renewed for a second season since our interview with the head of family programming at Canal TV, who oversaw that animated show. Incidentally, 81% of our Spotify listeners come from the United States, and we have listeners in 9 countries around the world on a regular basis. So Spotify, thank you very much for the information. Thank you, all of you that listen to us on Spotify, that listen to us on Zencaster or Amazon Music or Audible or Apple Podcasts or iTunes, any of the more than 40 podcast sites that have joined us this year. We really do appreciate it. And I have, for all of you out there listening on podcasts, 2 requests. Number one, if you know of any other podcast sites that are not taking our show, drop me a line, let me know. Drop that podcast place a line. Let them know you'd like to hear this program there, and let me know who to talk to, and we'll talk to them. That's how we got some of our podcast affiliates this year, was by conversations, by email or face-to-face. So do that. Also, we would love to have you listen to us live. Why? Because when you do, you get the opportunity to hear our guests live as our shows happen and respond to them by phone or chat room. So whether you're in the office or listening to us through your mobile phone somewhere out there or through your laptop, take time, if you can, be on our show, 3 o'clock Eastern, noon Pacific, Mondays, Fridays, sometimes Wednesdays or Thursdays, other days, and be part of the program so you can interact with our guests. And if you can't listen to us live for some reason, take down the phone number, 646-652-2906, take down the chat room place, SimonApple04. You go to blogtalkradio.com/televised. So if you're somewhere, you know, away from the office, away from home, and you have your mobile phone, check in that way. Call in. If you know who our guests are, and we let you know on our website, tawabitelevised.com, on Facebook, on X or Twitter, that way you can get in the program if you can't listen to us live, so or listen to us where you normally are. So be part of the program. We'd love to have you. And however you listen to us live, through our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, through our chat room, thank you, thank you, thank you. Number 3, on our news notes section on Monday, we mentioned the fact that Roku had gone over $100 a share. They had picked up, at the time we did the show live, $7 plus that day. And we had mentioned that it was our understanding that that was the first time that Roku had gone over $100 a share. Well, we did some further digging since then, and we want to let you know a couple things. First, the reason why the Roku stock went up as much as it did on Monday was because there was a financial analyst who recommended the stock, and that's how everybody sort of got the buzz and did the stock up. And we also found out that that's not the first time that Roku stock was $100 or more. In April of 2022, the stock was above $100 a share, and in fact had at some point been above $400 a share. So that's a clarification about our initial news note story. If anybody sort of got the wrong impression, we apologize. And we should point out that today, Roku stock is still above $100 a share. It's around $102, $103 a share. It was down a little bit, like between 50 and 95 cents last time we checked on CNBC before noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So for those of you that heard the show Monday, we just wanted to bring that up or update to you. And now it's time for our regular Friday feature we call the Takeaway of the Week, where we highlight a development or two that happens during the week that we think will impact the way you watch and use television in the future. And our development this week we call Video Games Get Smart Over Smart TV. And actually, it has been a theme that we have been highlighting all year long, because more and more smart TV sets and smart TV devices are offering their public the opportunity to play games over their television set without having to use a console on top of the set like PlayStation or Xbox. How they do it? With their voice, with a voice remote, or with a joystick that they handle and put in front of their set so that they can check it out. Why? Because more and more smart TV sets and devices have artificial intelligence built in so they can use audio features or special features like Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant to play these games on the set. If you have a Samsung Smart TV set, as of this summer, you had access to over 3,000 games, including Fortnite, to play anytime you wanted to. Most with a joystick, others with a voice or voice remote. LG has now offering hundreds of games through their game hub, including the Amazon service Luna, which is the cloud gaming service they have. So if you have a Luna game, you can play it on your Amazon Fire TV or product, and you can also play it on others on LG sets and other places too. And on Monday, we had a wonderful interview with David Lee, who is the proprietor of Next Playground, which we saw and showcased here in New York at the PepCom Holly Spectacular event last month. How does it work? It uses a Rubik's Cube-like plug-in. You plug into a smart TV set and device and allows you to use your body language with artificial intelligence to maneuver what's going on, whether it's educational games, fun games that you and other members of your family can play. How? Well, because the Rubik's Cube plug-in has a camera that is able, through artificial intelligence, to see what you're doing and have you respond to what is going on the screen. Time Magazine and Time Inc., the parent company of Time Magazine, has called Next Playground one of the top new 200 inventions of 2023. It's also gotten similar listings elsewhere. So there's a lot more that's happening. Also, Roku now gives you the opportunity to play games like Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy on your television set 24/7 with a voice or voice remote. And the expectation is that other smart TV set makers and device makers are going to also offer game hubs as time goes on. On Monday, we're going to have the key people from Sharp Electronics, which just got their new smart TV sets in play here in the United States, and we'll ask them if they're going to launch a game hub or do interactive games of some kind. And, of course, we have the Playfronts from the Interactive Ad Bureau this spring, where Samsung showed their thing, other people showed other things that they're doing in order to get advertisers to advertise in the games or surrounding the games. I bring this all up because yesterday I was at a special event at Spring Studios near Canal Street in Manhattan by an organization called the Game Changers Collective and an organization called One Earth Rising. And it was about box office versus boss battle, gaming's quiet eclipse over Hollywood. They had two wonderful guests, Jamie Hyder, some of you may remember her as Kat for two seasons on Law & Order SVU, and the other is Claire Nance, who is one of the key communications people at Activision Blizzard, which was just acquired by Microsoft. So during the question and answer period, I asked Claire, what do you think about this trend of smart TV sets and smart TV devices offering these game hubs and ways for people to interact with their games without the use of a console like PlayStation or Xbox? And what she had to say was, it's a theme of accessibility. It is a direction the industry is going from. And you're spot on. It is a future of the industry. And she thinks, after talking with her afterward, it is a big future of this industry. You get a sense that the folks like Activision Blizzard, Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, others, who, by the way, are also trying to adapt their best games into scripted television series, or maybe do things like the Dungeon Dragons Adventure Channel we spotlight in our first hour, that they do see that this is a growing force with the video game community. And incidentally, one of the points that was made by both Jamie and Claire is that anybody who thinks that video games are a niche entertainment is not really seeing what's going on, especially worldwide, that video games are more and more becoming a mass entertainment fun medium, and that smart TV sets and devices and the ability to play great games or casual games or any kind of games over them are going to be a major player in this. Check out these stats from various sources that they showed at this event last night. For example, there are now worldwide 3.2 billion video game players. The average gamer is 35 years old. 48% of the players are women. And the video game industry worldwide reaped last year, 2022, $185 billion. Does that sound like a niche marketplace to you? So it doesn't to both these folks and to me either. So you're getting a sense that we are going to see this side of the video game industry rapidly rise. And let's not forget also that NVIDIA has a cloud gaming service that they play on their smart sets and devices, Shield, called GeForce Now, and that we're going to see Netflix probably by this time next year have adaptations of their mobile games, which they've been offering in the marketplace for the last year, that they will go on smart TV sets and devices as an add-on to their very popular programming service, their mega content service. So the bottom line is very simple. We are seeing smart TV sets, smart devices are becoming the new force, maybe the big new force in the video game industry. And I would not be surprised next year, by this time next year, if every smart TV set, smart TV device, has a game hub. Keep in mind also that Apple TV's set-top box also has a game hub. Apple Arcade has been around for several years now. And while Apple does not want to promote this, which is shocking, it's getting a fandom. There are people who play Apple Arcade games on their smart television set using their Apple TV set-top box. So the skies are looking brighter and brighter and brighter for the role that smart TV sets and smart TV devices are going to play in the video game world. And the gamers more and more, as time goes on, and as this decade rolls on, are going to come to see smart TV sets and smart devices as their main hub in the video game world. For themselves or in multiplayer games, sky's the limit. And one offshoot, which I thought about earlier today, of this smart TV device game activity is this. It is also probably going to trigger other interactive uses of television. Think about this. If people can embrace the idea of smart TV sets and smart devices being their major way of playing video games, that stands to reason they're going to be up to doing other unique advanced television habits, like the ability to order tickets and make restaurant reservations and airline reservations and bus reservations through the television set, to order all sorts of products and services through the television set, to check on other aspects of their smart home or apartment, from energy to the front door to the television set, to do sports betting and wagering and gamification apps, and perhaps to make reservations for a cleaner or a laundry service or other services in their area or national chain through the television, like Angie, to the TV set. Or maybe even make purchases through a Carvana TV app or Cars.com or Carfax. And how about the opportunity to bank through the television set, make financial transactions through the television set? You know, we have banking apps now on mobile phones, on websites and laptops. Why not television? Well, the attractiveness of video games played through smart TV set devices could very well trigger all of that and much, much more. And keep in mind, you have at least one television set maker, Telly, who was on this program last week, that definitely wants to do those kind of apps through the television set. So what is happening with smart TVs and smart devices with video games could very well have huge consequences for where we go with interactive television. And artificial intelligence could also be a factor in both video games and the whole of the universe of interactive services that could be coming your way in the months and years ahead. And that is our takeaway of the week. What do you all think out there? I'd love to hear what you have to say. Give us a call while we wait for our next guest, who will be talking about artificial intelligence and its impact on television. That's Veritone Senior Vice President Sean King. Give us a call, 646-522-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, we've got our chat room. Love to hear from you that way, too. SimonApple04 is the name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And just go to there and do it. If you have a computer or laptop, go to blogtalkradio.com. You go to the category listing on the home screen, scroll down to entertainment. The entertainment attaches you to our place, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And then from there, it's a hop, skip, and jump to get into our chat room. So do so. We'd love to hear from you either way. Want to let you know that we will have at least two episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised coming your way next week, Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Have a big 90-minute show coming your way right here. We will have a very interesting discussion of Open Television. Believe it or not, the programming service has been available on smart TV sets and devices for several years and has become an interesting laboratory for new television series, new television pilots, new movies, etc. The co-founder and executive director, Elijah McKinnon, will join us as our lead guest. And we understand that Open TV is about to do a pitch contest for new television series. He'll tell us all about it. Then, another Internet Radio exclusive. In our second half hour, we will have the president of Sharp Electronics America, Jim Sandusky, and one of his lieutenants, Senior Vice President Peter Wheatfeld. We'll talk about the move by Sharp TV into smart TV sets back in the United States. How are they going to do it? What interactive services are they going to offer? What about games? Are they going to form a game hub? Are they going to do their own bundle? Roku's going to be their operating system. How are they going to use that? We'll get to all of that in our second half hour. In our final half hour, we're going to preview an Entrepreneur TV from the folks behind Entrepreneur Magazine. They've been thinking about doing a full-time channel for some time, and we will have Brad Gage, he's the programming head at Entrepreneur TV, with us. So be sure to tune in. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And on Friday, we will have somebody's about to become an unscripted television personality. Her name is Chantina Horton, and she and her husband, who run a very successful business down in Alabama, they're becoming the subject of a new series coming soon on a series called Nubian Television. I believe it's out in Boston. It's available on smart TV set device called Chantina's World, and we'll have both Chantina, and hopefully a producer or somebody from Nubian Television on our program. Next Friday, BTV's New Pacific right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. As I mentioned earlier, it is getting really, really clear that artificial intelligence is having a major role in television, how TV content is created and produced, how you are, be able to use interactive television, various flavors, and much, much more. We're going to now, for the rest of this program, really dig deep into the current and future consequences of artificial intelligence-powered television. And joining us live to do that from San Diego, California, is the Senior Vice President of a company called Veritone, Sean King. Sean, happy to have you with us on this December 1st.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And before we get going, what is Veritone? What does it do?
So Veritone, we are an AI company, and what we do is we focus on designing human-centered AI solutions to service customers primarily in the media and entertainment, as well as public sector and talent acquisition. So we build software and have intelligent solutions that really empower individuals at some of the world's most recognizable brands to run more efficiently, accelerate decision-making, and increase their growth.
On a scale of 1 to 10, so taking a thing from the McLaughlin Group, the long-running political discussion show, 1 or 0 being, no impact whatsoever, 10, as John McLaughlin used to say, metaphysical servitude. What is the current impact of artificial intelligence on television, both on and off camera?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, it's going to depend primarily on who the producers are, what they're looking to, and what type of content they're creating on it. So I'd have to say right now it's about a 5, but has the opportunity to be much higher than that.
Mm-hmm. And why do you say a 5? I think for some people, when they hear that, they would think immediately that's quite high, particularly at this point in its development.
Well, I think where people think about AI, they immediately go to – you know, these digital personas of people, these avatars, these digital representations of actors and themselves. Obviously, it's been a big impact on, you know, movies and obviously the SAG-AFTRA and Writers Guild strike. But there is AI that is being used today in workflow processes that are helping in that content creation. So if I am a researcher, I'm an editor, and I want to find clips that I want to bring into my program, if I want to go find an interview that I did with someone ready to go, they're able to leverage artificial intelligence to be able to gain insights into all the content, all the footage that they own, and all the IP that they have, and being able to use that to make it more searchable, and so allowing them to discover these moments. So instead of having an editor spending, 30 hours in a week researching and trying to find these moments, they're able to search and find it at their fingertips so they can focus more on the creative process.
We're just getting started with Veritone Senior Vice President Sean King. You have a question or comment for him? Get that phone going, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04. My name, he will be with us for most of our final half hour. Before we get back to Sean, before the bottom of the hour, let's give you a message, our only message this half hour from the fine folks at Liquid IV. If you haven't heard, there's a new wellness routine that's easy to take and keeps you in hydrated shape all the time. It's Liquid IV. It's a great-tasting drink mix in stick form that when you add with water, delivers hydration to your body faster and more efficiently than water alone. What's more, you get 5 essential vitamins, B3, 5, 6, 12, and good old vitamin C. And you get 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. There's 12 flavors to drink from. They're all delicious and refreshing, like Concord Grape, Passion Fruit, Watermelon. Plus, there's now a whole line of sugar-free flavors like Green Grape and Peach. So if you like, Liquid IV is, by the way, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. All 3 free in one. So what you got to do, if you want to get moving and get hydrated, fast, go to liquidiv.com, that's liquidiv.com to order, and you get 20% off using the promo code TELEVISED at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop for better hydration today. Just use the promo code TELEVISED, TLEVISED, at liquidiv.com. That's liquidiv.com. Remember, Liquid IV is all about fueling life's adventures with real hydrating. More with Sean King from Veritone after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Are you in the mood for the holiday blues? We're talking blues, great music, and it comes your way this coming Tuesday, December 12th, for the premiere of the new BTR miniseries, Holiday Blues. First episode is Tuesday, December 12th at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Holiday Blues, kicking off on BTR Tuesday night, December 12th at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, BTR is available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of this two-hour opening edition of December 2023 of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm back with you along for the ride from New York, 47 degrees, lightly raining here in the metropolitan area at the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you with us. We're rejoining Veritone Senior Vice President Sean King. If you have a question or comment for him, make that phone go, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Sean, we know that more and more smart television sets and smart TV devices, whether it's Samsung, LG, Roku, Sharp, Kelly, which is trying to be the iPhone or television, they now contain artificial intelligence that allows audio features like Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa, you can use them without a smart speaker to control the television set, manipulate all sorts of ways, the ability to order products and services, watch different interactive ads at different times, play video games without having to use a PlayStation or an Xbox. What do you make of this growing trend? And is it fair to say that artificial intelligence may be the long-awaited linchpin, the long-awaited element that makes interactive TV a mass medium?
Well, it definitely has. I mean, and we're seeing over the last few years how these IoT devices have become smarter. It started with our smartphones, obviously into Alexa, now into our television. I mean, it's providing a level of convenience to people and families when they're doing these things. Everyone is really wanting personalized experiences. And as you're starting to, and TV is no different. You know, even going back to some of those original recommendation engines back from TiVo in the days, and such. So, you know, the TVs, our devices are learning more and more about us, you know, who we are, what we are interested in, where we are, what do we like to buy, what do we like to watch, and really being able to help provide more personalized, customizable experiences that are kind of allowing us, you know, this ability to be able to consume content, you know, when we want to, you know, how we want to, and how we want to interact with that content in our programming. And, you know, and all of those is foundationally being powered by artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What does it portend, do you think, for how fast AI is going to grow and maybe stimulate this whole universe of interactive services and applications through the TV set that I talked about before you came on? The ability to order products and services, the ability to order make restaurant reservations, airline reservations, ticketing to entertainment events, control other aspects of your smart home or apartment, maybe even bank through the TV set, shop through the TV set, look at your credit score and make financial transactions through the set.
Yep. It's just like you are with your phone. We're trying, and it's working. It's a wonderful tool that is keeping you engaged with your television, and it's keeping you engaged with your programming. I mean, right now, I mean, before these things, I mean, I would remember, you know, Friday evenings with the family sitting around the television and watching something, and if there was something that came up, or if we wanted to do, it's like you would have to leave the television. You'd have to go do something. You'd have to go have that. And having to be able to have those capabilities within your entertainment experiences is allowing you to stay engaged with what you're watching, allowing you to stay engaged with what you're doing, and keeping the audiences on TV.
Is your company working with any of the smart TV players to enhance what they've got with AI software?
We are not working with the TV providers themselves, but we are working with many of the most recognizable broadcast and production companies and helping them leverage artificial intelligence to be able to get the type of content into their program, into their production studios, and being able to make their content more accessible to people so that they can be delivered through these smart TVs down into the living rooms.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned earlier, before the break, we just went through the strikes by the Screen Actors Guild and the Writers Guild of America, and what both of those strikes have in common is that artificial intelligence was, you can argue, the biggest issue. The sense among both groups that if there weren't guardrails or parameters or benchmarks, however you want to set the term, set up now at this point in artificial intelligence development, that they're going to be obsolete. I often use the metaphor of the episode of The Twilight Zone, The Obsolete Man, where Burgess Meredith plays a librarian who is deemed obsolete by the state, a future state, and he has to set up his own execution and have it be watched by millions of people. What do you make of the argument that was made and what kind of deal that both guilds came up with?
You know, at the end of the day, I think it really boiled down to consent. That, you know, if these, you know, producers, movie studios, broadcasters, if they are going to leverage artificial intelligence specifically around that, I mean, if we go on to social media today, you see many different uses of someone using a synthetic voice or an avatar that is a digital replication of an individual. And look, we see these in many films today. I mean, we've seen, you know, the synthetic voice of Val Kilmer. We've seen, you know, digital copies of de-aging of ones. We've seen great episodes within the Star Wars universe and how they've de-aged actors both from their face as well as their voice. You know, it's all boiling down at the end of the day to consent and then compensation for these actors. I mean, these are still actors. These are just the digital personas of these individuals. And rightfully so, the actors wanted to make sure that if that is being used in any of these productions, that they are providing their consent and as well as being compensated for the usage of that. And I think that was a very key point for those. You know, from the writer side of it, I mean, with the rise of large language models, like, I mean, the very successful launch of ChatGPT, now there's, you know, many others that are out there from Anthropic and others that are being leveraged. You know, they can come in and they can write new copy. It could write new stories. It could do things like that. And, you know, from the writer's perspective, it's, you know, they're still want to be able to make sure that what they are creating or what they are editing or what they are utilizing or these, you know, potential technologies for, that it is in addition to what they're doing. It's not a it's not taking away from what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the deals were fair, that the deals there are a starting point, a good starting point in terms of the relationship that they will have as artificial intelligence moves forward?
I think it's a wonderful, great starting point for these. But again, this technology and these technologies are growing at such a rapid pace. This is something that I think, you know, is going to be, you know, ongoing as these technologies become to continue to improve and continue to develop. But, you know, fundamentally, starting with consent is the best place to be able to do. Because if, you know, I am not an actor, but if I was, you know, there's myself. I'm Sean King. I'm an individual. I'm a person. And if there's a digital version of myself, you know, a synthetic clone of my voice, a digital persona of myself, that is still my name. It's still my image. It's still my likeness. And if anyone is using that, there needs to be that kind of authenticated version of myself where I am granting control and consent for this to be used for a specific use case. And that individual should be able to control, or I'm going to use kind of a little, you know, cliche phrase, but that person should be able to own their clone.
Before the strike, executives like David Cohen, the head of the Interactive Advertising Bureau that does the annual Digital Content New Fronts, was saying in public that there is no question that artificial intelligence is going to have a major role in how television content is created and produced. A few months ago, we had Chris Knight, who's one of the key people at Gusto TV, Canadian-based food network, that already is doing several shows which feature artificial intelligence-generated characters. And in fact, he's working on another series, I think it's going to come out early next year, who's on our show, that will have Mother Nature portrayed as an artificial intelligence-generated characters. Where are we at? How high is going to be high when all is said and done, do you think?
Well, that's a great question. I'm excited to see how this unfolds over the years to come. But you think about to be able to create, to make new things, to be able to use things. Right now, we are all confined by time. you know, the time it takes us to write something, the time it takes us to shoot something, the time it takes us to film something. These are areas where, you know, artificial intelligence can be used to greatly accelerate the content production. Because if we think of, you know, if I'm a major studio executive, you know, the production timeline that it takes to put on these things has been growing, and there's been new technologies, but the entire process has been relatively unchanged for years. And so these things can help kind of accelerate those things. But there are definitely times and places where there can be, where maybe it's weather, maybe it's sports recaps, maybe it's other things that, you know, have the time and the place where artificial intelligence could be used to greatly be able to accelerate that. You know, we touched on the TV side of the TV sets earlier around kind of personalization. Well, you know, if I am sitting in my living room and the television knows who I am and knows what sports I like to watch and knows what teams I like to follow, you know, there's that opportunity where artificial intelligence could be able to deliver me very bespoke custom recaps, either from news, from weather, from sports, that are personalized to me. And, you know, that's an amazing experience for a viewer, someone to be able to interact, being able to have delivered to me the content that I want, when I want it, and what I want to hear, and what I'm interested in, and being able to do that at scale to the individual. That's something that's not possible right now today through traditional, you know, content creation practices.
Speaking of what people are able to, by the way, Duck Northwest Media just joined us in our chat room, gave us a wonderful yellow thumbs up. Thank you, Duck, for being with us. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room, or give us a call, 646-652-2906. How is this going to impact the consumer in terms of being a creator of content? A few months ago, Amazon Fire TV and Amazon, a press conference they did out of their offices in Virginia, outside Washington, D.C., in a press conference that was not given a lot of coverage, frankly, by the tech press, by general press, by news, et cetera, they announced that before the end of this year, if you have Amazon Fire TV, either as a streaming stick, a plug-in, or a television set, using generative AI, you are going to be able to create your own video art and display it on the television screen in front of you, as well as curate your own art gallery, again, using generative AI to showcase the pictures, the paintings, et cetera, that the statues that you want, it will be in top of the TV set. And it raises the question of, is this a stepping stone to, let's say, anybody being able to create their own television series or their own made-for-TV movie or be part of a community that does so using AI, generative AI?
It could be a stepping stone. I'd have to say it's a pretty good sized step to be able to do that, but it's definitely lowering the barrier to entry to be able to start creating content. And we saw this barrier to entry to creating content, you know, before. If we go back and we look at right now, like social influencers, with the rise of, you know, cell phones and the cameras and everything else, I mean, we have I'm holding in my hand right now something that I could use to film content and monetize that right now today with my iPhone. And we saw that take place. And then what the byproduct of that is we started to see these, you know, content creators, these social creators. You know, we see them on YouTube, we see them on TikTok, we see them on Instagram, we see them on others. And it created a community of creators that were really leveraging iPhones or Androids or any of these, you know, filming devices, because that barrier to entry lowered dramatically. So AI and these abilities using large language models and being able to create, you know, content leveraging, you know, these technologies is definitely a stepping stone. But if someone wants to go in and start creating their own made-for-TV movie, their own content, like they would, just in the way that someone was becoming a social media creator with their phone years ago.
And by the way, Sean, some of these YouTube creators, like Dude Perfect and others that we're starting to find out about, they're now creating their own television networks available on smart TV sets and smart devices. And some of them are, it's not just about, you know, taking their YouTube content and modifying it for television, for TV screens. They're talking about creating original content. They're talking about getting user-generated content. They even talk about interactive TV features that maybe involve the ability of viewers to be part of what these makers make.
And this goes back to kind of the point that I was saying, you know, at Veritone, where we're looking to really help empower, you know, individuals, companies alike, you know, to be able to leverage artificial intelligence to be able to amplify what they're working on. And again, you know, in the content creation world and the examples kind of we've been talking about here, it's lessening the barrier to entry for other, you know, complex things. But also one thing that we haven't talked about is the accessibility of what that could do for content. You know, if I, you know, am wanting to, maybe I'm not a native U.S. speaker and I want to be able to watch something that's there, but I want to be able to hear it in the characters' voices in a different language, being able to do that. You know, right now in the content production, you're having, you know, folks that are going to have to come in and redub over and do something on it. But now here, if I'm watching a movie and George Clooney's in it, you know, artificial intelligence can provide that opportunity that, well, not only can I watch it and hear George Clooney, but I could hear George Clooney be speaking Spanish or Italian or French or German. You know, these are some of those things that are capabilities in which AI can really amplify everything that you're doing.
We are talking with Sean King. He is Senior Vice President of Veritone, an AI player, and he's joining us live from San Diego, California this half hour on Tamavi Televised. Sam, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us. We're here till the top of the hour. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, as Duck Northwest Media, our very good chat room person, is doing, giving us a yellow thumbs-up hand along the way. Don't forget, 90-minute episode of our show coming your way when we hear you next on Monday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. We will have the co-founder and executive director of Open Television. It's a very interesting incubator for new television series, TV pilots, and much more, Elijah McKinnon. It's available on smart TV sets and devices, and it looks like they're going to launch a pitch contest for the very first time. Then we'll find out what Sharp is doing in the world of smart TV sets with the president of Sharp Electronics USA, Jim Sandusky, and one of the lieutenant senior vice president of sales and marketing, Peter Wheatfeld, plus Entrepreneur TV plumbing head Brad Gage about the Entrepreneur TV network that's coming soon to both smart TV sets and devices and maybe even cable and satellite operators starting, we think, later this month. That's all 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Monday, right here on Tamavi Televised. Are you getting a handle on how fast, how speedy this AI technology is improving? Because that's one of the things a lot of people talk about is it's tough to get a handle. It's tough to get your arms around how fast this technology is evolving.
It is evolving at an absurd rate right now. And I mean, we're kind of at an inflection point right now where some of these, you know, machines and some of these models that are created are in a position where they're actually being able to train other models. So you're having machines training machines and compute that's adding there, and it's growing at such a rapid pace. So it's which is an exciting for someone like in our position or in someone in specifically media entertainment, because that opportunities that it creates, the creative things it could, creative ideas that it could spark, imagery that could be created or done. But the rate at which it's coming, it's almost to the point where if I did nothing but try to stay up to speed on everything that was developing as it was developing, I mean, I don't know if I have enough time for that even to be a full-time job. So I think it's very important for any individual or any group that is thinking about, you know, using artificial intelligence or how it could they could leverage it, you know, really starting to think about, okay, well, what am I really trying to solve for first? And being able to kind of refine, all right, how am I going to potentially use this and what am I going to be able to do with this? Because you're going to need to start thinking through about, okay, well, then what are my principles in which I'm going to use to manage or I'm going to govern myself or my group and how we're going to be leveraging AI?
Are you hearing from some of the top content makers for television, whether like a Dick Wolf or Greg Berlanti or Shonda Rhimes or Tyler Perry or Byron Allen, are they starting to give you some feelers about, you know, where they see AI going, how they'd like to use it?
You know, not specifically to any of those that you've mentioned there, but, you know, what we're really starting to see a lot from our partners that we're looking through, and I'll just give a use case. For many groups specific, I'll pick sports for an example. You know, we're working with these customers, and we're ingesting all of their camera feeds that are coming from the events that they're filming. So as a viewer at home, you're watching a singular camera that's being broadcast. You're not getting to see everything that's taking place. And one of the things that they're starting to notice and realize through AI is there's so much value in not just the broadcast, but all the rest of the content that's being created, and finding kind of secondary and tertiary use cases for that content, which is allowing them to get more out of what they've created and being able to get more second life. And that can come in, you know, maybe it's a documentary about, and there's more films, there's different crowd reactions, there's other things that you saw that weren't in the broadcast feed. And maybe it's making it available for licensing opportunities. If there's, you know, an advertiser that wants to use a shot of an athlete, you know, making a putt at a golf event, or, you know, wanting to incorporate that into a different story. You know, they're finding and being able to get more and new use cases out of the content that they've been creating that they weren't able to do before. And that's allowing them also to, again, make more content, increase more revenue, which ultimately at the end of the day is allowing them to do more and continue to create and continue to innovate on the content that they're making.
Mm-hmm. Early next year, a new all-news channel, it's called Channel One, is going to premiere, where a good chunk of the content is going to be artificially intelligence generated, whether it is the anchor people you see or the reports that you see. Now, I understand that they're going to label on the screen when that happens. For example, I've seen like a typical segment where, let's say, if they get footage of somebody speaking another language, you will see that person artificially generated speaking in English, but going through the same situation as the person originally was in whatever language, whether it's French or Spanish or whatever. Is that kind of use of AI out of bounds, or does it make you queasy, or does it make you pause that AI should have that kind of a role in journalism?
That's a fine line, and I'd say from those, my big, you know, fundamental that I, that, you know, this is Sean King speaking for those, disclosures are key. So again, if anything is being generated, just like, you know, for the actors or the writers, consent is key. Disclosures are going to be just as key. You know, am I able to see it? Am I able to view it? Am I able to understand that this being delivered to me was artificially generated? But to that same point right now, it's just as much of a thin line, because if I'm watching a live news broadcast and I'm having this individual or this news anchor speak to me, you know, was that written? Was that factually accurate? Was that correct? I mean, as long as it's disclosed, and I think every individual needs to know that you should still apply your same level of critical thinking that you would to what you're being told as you would from you're watching this or getting an opinion from a real person.
Mm-hmm. How do you or companies like yours try to alert the public and to ease people's concerns about where they see generative AI, ChatGPT doing, and how it will have a role in the television that they watch and the television you? What do you think needs to be done to sort of ease their concerns?
Education number one from those, and educate, being able to tell them, you know, who they are, what it is, how it's being used, how it's being leveraged, what it's capable of doing, education being, you know, number one. And then the second piece of those is actually encouraging everyone to be able to try it and to interact and to play around. I mean, everyone should go interact with a large language model and go in and act just so they can have an understanding from it. You know, I have my wife that, you know, works in the education field, and obviously the hot topic of, you know, AI in that area. And, you know, one of the things we take around is like, look, you can go in and ask a question to a large language model and you can get an answer, and everyone thinks, well, oh my goodness, now everyone is cheating. Well, you know, AI didn't invent plagiarism. You know, that happened long ago, and you know, and when the internet came into the space, you know, it made it easier for students or anyone to be able to go and find the facts. It's just being a tool that folks can use to really empower them to be able to do more with their time. But it's got to start as everyone needs to just be educated on what it is and have a healthy dose of experimentation to see what, you know, what questions they may have. How does it make them feel? Where do they see the benefits and values? And where do they have those concerns? you know, it really starts with education and experimentation.
And like you said, the more accessible the technology, the better it is for everybody.
Correct.
We are just getting started with this discussion. You have a hunch, and a very good hunch, that this discussion and how artificial intelligence or AI is going to unfold as TV you watch, TV you use, it's going to be around for quite a long time, certainly through the rest of this decade and maybe, just maybe, beyond. And we will all see how we benefit from it or not. We'll leave the judgment up to you with this discussion. If you want to know more about Sean's venture, here's where it is on the web. It's veritone.com, V-E-R-I-T-O-N-E, veritone.com. And Sean, we'd love to have you, or if you're working with content makers, series, et cetera, or new networks, we'd love to have them on the program to get their thoughts about how they're using AI, hopefully for the betterment of us all. Sean, thank you very much for coming on the program. It's been a great pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Take care.
You too. Have a great, great weekend, a wonderful holiday season ahead.
Thank you so much.
Sean King, Senior Vice President of Veritone, joining us live from San Diego. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today, all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming your way on Monday, we're going to have Elijah McKinnon, the co-founder and executive director of the Incubator for Television, Open Television. Plus, from Sharp Electronics USA, the president, Jim Sandusky, and Peter Wheatfield, Senior Vice President, about their company's move back into U.S. TV making, smart TV set making, with Roku as the operating system. And the plumbing head of Entrepreneur TV, coming soon to a TV near you through either satellite, maybe cable, certainly smart TV sets and devices, maybe by the end of this month, Brad Gage. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, check us out over the weekend on our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and on our more than 40 podcast platforms. Love to hear what you thought about today's episode. What's your thoughts about where TV's at and where it's going, and the use of AI along the way? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, X, or Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum, X, or Twitter, at UBC Simon, TWBT. Whatever you have to say, I respond back to you within 24 hours, and that's because we appreciate what you have to say, and what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. They are not affiliated with Blog Talk Radio or the distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Websites are provided by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Fakus is our web coordinator. Tomorrow We Televised was brought to you today by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. And by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. For Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. We are back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our web and podcast destinations. Whatever you're doing to now and then, make it safe and make it great. And if you want to make a contribution to Israel Emergency Funds at this time, make sure you go and look them up on Yahoo or Google. You can also go to the UJA campaign, and that's at ujafedny.org. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.